that they've so long understood it to be. I remember I was doing an interview for a po political org a political global affairs organization that is based in Asia, in Japan. And initially, when I had told them about our docuseries, they didn't even take it seriously because they were like, this notion that Canada could support overthrowing democracies in foreign countries and could support, the Saudi war in Yemen, Canada? No. And then they began looking into our docuseries and they were like, wow, I had no idea. We gotta interview you. And so they had interviewed us. And so, but I think that's just the thing. So many other, people in other countries, this notion that Canada, that we're not this benevolent power we claim to be, that's just so incomprehensible to them that I think they just don't want to engage with the content because it just goes so out of their common understanding.
It's like saying Santa Claus is a serial child abuser. I mean, it might be true, but please, we don't want to hear it. We don't want to disappoint the children. Well, I saw you on a foreign online on a foreign getting interviewed by a foreigner, an American, Lee Camp, a very estimable discloser of secrets of all sorts. And how did you hook up with Lee in the first place?
Lee Camp, I'd watched his program when it was on RT, and unfortunately, as a result of Russia's invasion of Ukraine, he's been taken off RT. A lot of his programs have been removed on removed off YouTube and all these different media websites. That's how I initially knew of Lee Camp, but I know that he since then has kind of run this web series online on Facebook and Twitter, and that's how he's getting his message out. So I decided, let me contact him and tell him about our in docuseries because I know that he focuses a lot on foreign policy and very much likes to criticize the atrocities of the West. So I felt this is something he might be interested in, and sure enough, he was. And I'm very glad he had me on because it was it exposed our docuseries to Americans and to just a wider audience as well.
Yeah, and I caught that up at mintpressnews.com, and he's called it Canada is part of the U.S. war machine, and you and he have an extended conversation and cover a lot of the docuseries. It's in six parts. Maybe you could, for those who didn't catch the November conversation we had or Lee Camp interview, can you sort of give a thumbnail of what the project looks like?
Yeah, so it, the docu series, it's called "Truth to the Powerless: An Investigation into Canada's Foreign Policy." It's a six-part docu series, as you mentioned, and so we kind of start from the World War II era, the post-World War II era, right up until the present time, in terms of Canada's foreign policy. So we begin the docu series looking at how Canada had actually supported Nazism and supported fascism, contrary to public belief. And Canada had played an instrumental role in NATO and in opposing independence movements in the developing world that were fighting against the colonial occupiers, like the British and the Belgians. And we had supported suppressing those forces. And then we talk about Canada's support for apartheid South Africa, Canada's support for apartheid Israel. We talk about Canada's support for the war in Iraq, the Gulf War, the first Gulf War, and the war in 2003. Contrary to public belief, Canada played an instrumental role behind the scenes in supporting the second invasion of Iraq in 2003. We talk about Canada's intervention, its war in Afghanistan, It's a NATO invasion in Libya. We talk about also Russia-Ukraine as well. Towards the end of the fifth episode, we talk about that as the legacy of NATO, the legacy of NATO expansionism. And what's interesting about this docuseries is that we interview the politicians that are responsible for formulating, advocating, championing Canada's foreign policy. And we also interview the academics and dissidents that are challenging Canada's foreign policy. So we interview both the establishment figures, and we also interview the individuals that are challenging the establishment. That's what's so unique about this docuseries. You know, one prominent instance is our last episode, episode 6, we devote significant attention to Canada's role in Haiti in 2004 in overthrowing the democratically elected leader of Haiti, the first democratically elected leader of Haiti, Jean-Bertrand Aristide. And we interview Canada's Minister of Foreign Affairs, Bill Graham, and Canada's Minister of Defense, David Pratt. We get the establishment narrative that Canada, we were going in there to bring order to Haiti. Haiti was being infiltrated by these gang of rebels, and we went there to bring order, and we didn't take part in a coup. That's the establishment line. And then we interview academics like Justin Pordor and activists like Yves Engler, and we expose the real truth, how Canada intervened, and played a role in kidnapping the democratically elected leader, Jean-Bertrand Aristide. So we just reveal so many secrets that have been buried by the establishment. We just bring that to the fore by interviewing the establishment and those challenging the establishment. So that's kind of in a nutshell.
That's a fantastic aspect of it too, that you do get access to people that you, for this kind of a documentary, you wouldn't really expect to get access to, especially like the former minister, Bill Graham. When we were speaking about it, the fact that he died just shortly after the film was released, he was really a dying man who must have known he was dying. And yet there's something of a Nuremberg trial aspect to this, where he could sit there and tell you straight in the face, on and off camera, we didn't do anything wrong. This denialism, I would put it, it seems ingrained in the perpetrators.
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing with Bill Graham is at the time, I was a student at the Monk School of Global Affairs. I was a grad student. He was my professor. So that at the time I did the interview. So I was risking potentially being kicked out of the Monk School because he had that much power. If he wanted to, he could have kicked me out. But I said, I felt that this is a man I knew he had health problems. I felt that this was the last chance I would ever get to, confront Bill Graham and actually challenge his record, because, Bill Graham is, just revered in the University of Toronto and just the mainstream as this, great diplomat, this great politician. I wanted to challenge him. I wanted to have that one opportunity, that last opportunity to challenge his record. And so I decided to, really grill him on his foreign policy. We talked about Afghanistan, but we also talked about Haiti. And he just continually just refused to acknowledge the possibility that Canada committed any atrocities in Haiti. He repeatedly said that, we were doing a peacekeeping mission there. We brought order there. There was no bloodshed, which is all false. And off camera, he told me, he recalled the story. He said, one day I was walking down the street and some of these Canadians came up to me and they heckled me and they called me a war criminal for what I did in Haiti. And then his face, it looked so pained. He said, I'm not a war criminal. I didn't do anything wrong in Haiti. But he looked so pained. The cameras are off. But he's telling me this, so he has no reason to lie. But it was at that moment that I thought, wow, this guy genuinely believes everything he's saying is the truth. It was at that moment where I kind of discovered that that the people in power, maybe they don't always know the truth. We begin this docuseries. The first scene of the docuseries is Noam Chomsky, who we interview. He's looking right at the camera, and he's saying that the people in power already know the truth. It's the powerless who don't. So it's our responsibility to bring to light, to educate, to inform the powerless. The powerless are the general population. And so once we inform them, then they can mobilize and they could challenge those in power and they could bring about real change. That's why this docuseries is called Truth to the Powerless, because we're getting from the powerful, the establishment line, thinking that they really know the truth, but they're lying. And then we interview the activists and academics challenging that narrative. But when I interviewed Bill Graham, it was kind of this realization that, you know, afterwards, that this guy really believes everything he's saying is the truth. And so then this brought about this, you know, conundrum that, wow, you know, if the powerful, the people in power actually know, actually think what they're doing, you know, actually think, believe it's the truth, then what does that really mean, you know?
Well, that sounds like a psychological or spiritual malady, that they're unable to see truth, or they invent a truth more palatable to them. Do you explore that at all? The psychology behind the people pulling these levers that release the bombs and missiles that fall on the innocent and helpless?
I mean, I wish we did, but it's really, we just kind of get their establishment views. And, with the exception of Bill Graham, I never challenged any other politician that I interviewed, because we interview ambassadors, we interview the defense ministers, we interview, diplomats, and, you know, member of parliament. Never challenged any one of them. The only person I ever challenged when I was interviewing was Bill Graham. And that's only because I knew that he was dying. He was in his last days. And I wanted to really press him on his record, because I knew he was never pressed on his record in Haiti, especially. So I wanted to be that person to finally tell him, you know, hey, I know what you did. You know, you have this mask on, that you're this benevolent person, but I know the truth, and I want you to know that I know the truth. So that was,
I know what you did last summer. Well, people, I'm old enough, Prasanna, to remember Bill Graham and remember him when he was in power, before he became this this gray eminence in the halls of academe. And he was an imposing guy, physically imposing, intellectually imposing, certainly a man that was, to hear him speak, he was absolutely devoted to his vision of the way the world should be. So, yeah, I congratulate you for that. If you just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Prasanna Chanmugathas. Prasanna has he completed the film film series we're talking about, Truth to the Powerless, an investigation into Canada's foreign policy. I want to bang on this drum a little bit more, Prasanna, because it strikes me, I don't know if you saw Harold Pinter's 2005 Nobel Peace Prize acceptance speech, prize for literature, but when he talks about the American Empire and the propaganda that has created this image of America around the world as being the good guy, despite all of the terrible things that they have obviously done, he calls it almost witty, this accomplishment of American propaganda. I wonder, though, with Canada, it seems maybe even wittier when you mentioned that the Japanese people that you spoke with and others, just they almost can't even see it as possible that Canada could be this dark player on the world stage. And for Canadians, too, it seems nobody wants to believe that. How do you think this is accomplished?
I've always suspected it's just really good PR. It's just really good public relations. The fact that we have, even in our education system in Canada, we're taught about Lester B. Pearson. He's this peacekeeping guy in Canada. We're known, you know, for the, we defuse the Suez Crisis. But you know what you're not taught, you know, in Canada is how Lester B. Pearson, he played an instrumental role in the partition of Palestine. He played an instrumental role in, you know, creating this condition which led to the expulsion of Palestinians, the brutal bloodshed, the Nakba, the establishment of the State of Israel. You know, you're not taught about how Lester B. Pearson actually supported the Vietnam War, how, you know, on behalf of the United States, Canada, under Lester B. Pearson, delivered bombing threats to North Vietnam, which is an egregious violation of international law. And you know, we uncover that all in this docuseries. But, you know, you have this huge, you know, media propaganda of Canada being this peacekeeping country. And, you know, the world, the mainstream media, global outlets, media outlets around the world just kind of adopt that. And this narrative of Canada being this peaceful nation, it allows us to covertly do things for the United States that the United States, you know, can't necessarily, you know, always get away with, you know, publicly, that they might face censure publicly. So we, as Canada, we kind of do things covertly for the United States. And our role in Iraq in 2003, the covert support that we provided is just one example of how we can covertly do things for the United States while publicly having this narrative that, oh, we're not going into Iraq. We need a UN Security Council resolution. This is Canada's position as the peacekeeping nation. But covertly, we will provide you all the support that you want to carry out this invasion.
Well, and the country enjoys this snow white mantle of do-gooderism around the world that it can say something like, we're not going to go into Iraq, but at the same time, it can go on the world stage and not condemn the United States for what they're doing, but say, oh, we understand what America is doing here, but we just don't feel we can get involved. But there's no condemnation. I don't think there was ever a word of condemnation from the liberal government of Jean Chrétien against the Iraq invasion and while it was going on.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, there was this recently, viral clip with Yves Engler. He had confronted the Minister of Sports, Pascal, and asked her, you know, shouldn't we also, you know, if we're going to be boycotting Russian athletes, shouldn't we, as a result of Russia's invasion of Ukraine, shouldn't we be boycotting American athletes as well for America's invasion of Iraq? And what about that? And, you know, and that kind of went viral because it exposed this hypocrisy, you know, that while Russia's invasion of Ukraine is worthy of strong condemnation, what about, you know, what the United States did in Iraq and the fact that Canada supported that covertly as well? Why aren't these two things being treated the same?
Or the fact that the Canadian embassy in Kiev housed and sheltered people that were planning to overthrow a democratically elected government in the weeks prior to the Maidan Square uprising and massacre, and that Canada has played an active role throughout training and supplying the coup government there in its war against the eastern provinces of the former Ukraine, all of which I would argue could be war crimes. This isn't history, though. I mean, what you're talking about is history, but it's history that's an ongoing story. When you're talking about Haiti and Canada's role in overthrowing that democratically elected government, the government of Aristide in 2004, well, just these past weeks, Canada seems intent on interfering in Haiti. They said they were going to send $100 million, about 2 weeks ago now, to Haiti on top of armored personnel carriers and other money, and sending the military, the Canadian military, down there to fly over and do reconnaissance, all in the name of keeping the peace and for the betterment of the Haitian people. What should we know about what's going now? Are you following the situation in Haiti today?
I mean, our media has been, you know, the mainstream media has been, you know, portraying this as the situation where in Haiti, where there's just these, you know, there's this chaos and disorder, you know, gangs of rebels are on the street, and there's kind of some parallel here between the situation now in 2004, where it, you know, the media is portraying this chaos and disorder, and you have the United States, you know, kind of coming to Canada and saying, you know, we need you to intervene on this. You know, the fact that in 2004, Canada intervened, it was, you know, we played a significant role because we're a Francophone country. We have this global image as a peacekeeping nation. So we were able to do things in Haiti, which the United States wasn't able to do. And that was something that, you know, Bill Graham even talked to me about when I interviewed him. And, you know, with respect to the present case in Haiti, you have the situation where it's being portrayed that there's this chaos and disorder. But a lot of the Haitians that are protesting are, you know, calling for democracy or calling for an overthrow of the U.S. Western appointed leaders that, you know, that the situation has been increasingly destabilized, you know, most notably since 2004 when Aristide was expelled, but also since the assassination of Jovenel Moïse, the Haitian president. And what we've seen is we haven't seen a democratic, free and fair election in Haiti, which if that were to ever happen, the Famille Lavalas party, Aristide's party, would win overwhelmingly. But obviously, Canada, the United States don't want that, because if that happens, then the Haitian poor, they can finally live to a level of certain dignity, which if that were to happen, they can have, you know, adequate health care, schooling, malnutrition rates would go down. They can have, you know, increased literacy. And if that were to, that was a lot of that was actually happening under Aristide's rule, under the rule of the Lavalas party when they were in power during the 90s and early 2000s. But the United States, Canada did not like this because it was setting a bad example. If a poor country like Haiti can better itself, then this would significantly threaten our allies in Latin America, and then it would also threaten our biggest ally, Mexico, because then Mexico would want to take things under its own control, expel the international corporations that are in there, and this would negatively impact the Canadian, the Western corporate establishment. So that's why we can't have any genuine democracy in Haiti. And a lot of this current news that's going on about the situation, the chaos and disorder in Haiti right now, is kind of being framed for, once again, the West to go in, establish law and order, quote unquote, akin to 2004, and once again to really solidify a strongly Western-backed leader that will be submissive to the corporate interests of the West, to the corporate interests of companies, Montreal companies like Gildan Activewear, which is the largest blank T-shirt making company in the world, where the T-shirts are made by Haitian sweatshop laborers. You know, that is the interest that Canada wants to secure and the United States wants to secure in Haiti.
Well, I've seen reports, too, that there's secretive offshore oil drilling going on in Haitian-controlled territory. I don't know if that's true or not. It wouldn't surprise me, but there's long been rumors that there's a rich oil and gas field in the area, in the shallow waters of the Caribbean there. Well, we're fast running out of time, Priscina, but tell me, I would like to talk about Libya as well and what Canada did there and how Canada's likes to put itself forward as a big friend of Cuba and how that's disingenuous to be kind to Canada. But we're fast out of time for that. What are you doing now? I asked you this in November, what your next project was, and you said, geez, look, I've been doing this for three years. You know, give me a break. Well, yeah, I gave you a break, but now you've had your break. What are you doing now?
Well, right now there's just a number of different projects that I'm
You're keeping it close. You're keeping your cards close to your vest. Okay, that's fair enough. All right, well Priscina Mugathas, you can find go to truthtothepowerless.com. You can find this fantastic docuseries, 6 episodes, as Priscina says. And again, it's just so important because in Canada, next to Eve Engler, as you mentioned, I don't know where we find out about the true image of this country, both at home and abroad. It just doesn't seem available.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, thanks a lot, Prasanna, for coming on. And I also want to thank Eve Engler, who you mentioned, for coming on in the first half of the show some days ago. And good luck, continued good luck with the series, Prasanna, and I do hope we get a chance to speak again.
Thanks so much, Chris.
It was 2008 and the panic was on. The banks were all collapsing, the boom times were gone, the panic was on. The panic was on. Homeowners couldn't pay all those mortgages subprime that the bankers had been selling so much of the time. So Congress took action and bailed out the rich with their message for the rest of us. Ain't life a bitch? It was 2008 and the panic was on. The banks were all collapsing, the boom times were gone, the panic was on. The panic was on. Then they passed legislation to re-regulate the banks, kind of like the old laws called Dodd-Frank. Entered Jamie Dimon, John Stumpf, and Greg Becker, who threw around their money like some plutocratic wrecker. And once they got the law repealed, they still had cash to burn to make lots more bad investments with a very high return. Like any Ponzi scheme, it fell apart, and then me and my fellow Americans are left to bail them out again. Yeah, it's 2023 and the panic is on. The banks are all collapsing, the boom times are gone, the panic is on. The panic is on. Politicians on the boards of banks, they regulated. Now maybe those old rules will again be reinstated while we move into camper vans in a parking lot. Dreaming of the old days when we had a plot. Yeah, it's 2023 and the panic is on. The banks are all collapsing, the boom times are gone, the panic is on. The panic is on. It's 2023 and the panic is on. The banks are all collapsing, the boom times are gone, the panic is on. Panic is on.
Moscow, Tokyo, New York. Guerrilla Radio is everywhere. Online at guerrilla-radio.com. Everywhere, all the time.
Chicago, Jakarta, Helsinki, Cape Town, Sao Paulo, Manchester, Bangalore, and somewhere in Russia, I can't actually remember the name of.
Hi, this is Jesse Brown, the host of Canada Land, Canada's only media criticism program. Every week I talk to some of the most interesting people in the country about some of the things that matter most. We talk about the news media, about comedy, film, music, and politics. And you can now listen on CJSF 90.1 FM every Monday at 5 p.m. Wait for it.
Broadcasting on the internet and at 90.1 FM from high atop Burnaby Mountain, you're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM.